Hello from day one of Advertising Week Europe 2025, where we are recording live at the AW360 podcast studio presented by UserCentrics. This is episode one of the Morning Wake Up podcast, and over the next 20 minutes or so, we're going to take you through what's happening at Advertising Week. Today, I'm joined by Adelina Peltea, Chief Marketing Officer at UserCentrics. Welcome.
Thank you, Richard. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, my pleasure. So to start things off, I mean, this is the AW360 studio presented by UserCentrics. Tell us about UserCentrics.
So we're in the space of data privacy, and we are making sure, or helping marketers make sure, that they can respect users' choices when it comes to how their data is being collected, handled, and transmitted between different companies, while still ensuring growth. I know that one of the big pain points of marketers is like, how do I keep driving performance and how do I know what's working? And we're building the solutions and the strategies and tactics that will help them go for that with our privacy-led marketing approach.
And what sorts of things are you, from a UserCentrics perspective, looking forward to at the event?
Just what's the latest trends in advertising? There are different customer sentiments. People care about different things, one of them being how their data is being used and their data privacy overall. But also like balancing that with the pains of marketers and the new trends in the industries and stuff like that. We're going to have a session as well on YouTube performance, and how you can demonstrate the things are working with that while having like people's trust handled properly.
Let's dive into that. I'm very curious actually about your panel. So that's coming up on Thursday, day three of the event at 11:40 a.m. I have yet to see too many people kind of bridge that gap between data privacy and YouTube. Like, that's all new to me. We see a lot of, you know, how to succeed on YouTube, using YouTube, you know, influencers on YouTube. I've never seen a discussion from the privacy perspective.
You'll see it here. We will combine, indeed, performance with privacy. I'm basically saying it in this way, like, data is the new oil, right? Like, that was the statement for like almost a decade now, and it keeps being very powerful. But trust, so consented data, it's the currency. And when people see value, when they see all these things, they will help you as a company, and they will buy from you, and they will trust you, and like, you can help that with the brand. So it's really important that you have contextual consents, that you have really good brand campaigns, that when you land on a website, people can see that their data privacy is being respected, how you communicate on that, how you're on brand, how you're transparent about things. So all these things matter more and more.
Excellent. Well, you know, every advertising week has what we call tracks. And today's tracks are pretty important to the industry, I would say. The first and foremost, AI and data. You guys know data very well. And I'm sure, as an extension of your work in privacy, you probably are keeping quite an eye on AI, I would think. What sorts of things do you see in AI right now that marketers should be aware of?
Well, I think we're all reading the news, right? Like, AI is evolving rapidly, exponentially, and there are different concerns in the market. At the moment, it's a bit on the user's data privacy, but even more on assets from businesses, things that are published or things from, I don't know, the Hollywood scene and whatever. Like, everyone is concerned about what data is AI trained with. And once that training data gets in, it's very hard to get out. It's not something that you can just delete and that's it. So, of course, this space is evolving very rapidly. We're also, like, looking into different solutions here. It's a fascinating world to be in. So I think, like, the whole ecosystem is working now on this.
Do you happen to be using AI for anything day-to-day, just as, like, maybe as a, I don't know, a second virtual assistant or anything, me personally?
We do. In the marketing team, we actually have custom GPTs for our own content. So we keep on talking about privacy-led marketing, which is the way you do marketing in a world where data privacy is here to stay. How do you keep growing your business? How do you keep doing performance marketing, email marketing, and so on? And the more content we create, then we train the custom GPTs with this content, and then it helps us create more and have like interesting bits for media, for content we put out there, and we're going to launch a magazine and a TV show with all this. So as we need more and more content creation, we want to strategize more, see real life problems, but then we use the custom GPTs to help us scale content.
Excellent. And last note on AI, for now. I mean, you can't ever have the last note on AI at all, especially during advertising week, but the last one for now. When it comes to AI-enabled advertising, how do you feel about the market right now? Positive, negative, probably not negative, but somewhere in between?
Yeah, I think it's still settling, right? So on one hand, you get help because you have even help with the creatives and with the content and everything, targeting and so on. But then also, like, people, especially on the creative side, like, people are starting, like, what about the copyrights when AI is trained on this? So it's a lot of controversies. What I'm a fan of is not to just use the AI with things trained from the outside, but to train with your own things, as long as you respect your customer's data. So, like, I'm talking more like your own creatives, your own content, but not so much customer data that you put up there.
Excellent. The next track is retail and commerce media, which retail media is one of those things that if you asked me what it was 6 years ago, I wouldn't be able to tell you. Now it's everywhere. One of the significant movements with retail media networks, especially, you know, past couple of years, is their use of data and their access to it. I mean, we're seeing a lot of retailers with a lot more data that they're getting from, you know, for example, their shoppers in store, online, what have you. So I'm sure that's an area that you at UserCentrix are paying close attention to as well.
Yeah, I think the retail world has evolved a lot into blending online and offline, like digital experiences with in-shop experiences and so on. And that's a lot of data passing from one system to another. And this needs to be done very carefully because, like, again, we should respect users' choices in terms of what the data should be used for and where can it be used for. There is a big tendency now for first-party data. So if I hand you the data for you as a company, you can use it, but for yourself rather than getting it to third parties and so on. And one of my favorite is actually, like, the fact that in digital, if we take a shop analogy, we're doing things wrong. So take a website, right? Like, the first thing we see, you enter a website, you have the banner with, like, we want all the data from you. But if you enter a shop, that will never happen in real life. Like, nobody will come, like, the moment you step in the shop and say, oh, what's your shoe size and what's your t-shirt size and whatever, right? So we're like, can you just tell people a few things at the beginning, but then let them browse around. And then when they're interested to buy a t-shirt, then you can ask for their t-shirt size. The fascinating thing is you can do this on your website as well, but very few marketers know about this or apply this. So everything is, like, front-loaded a bit too much, which doesn't happen in the natural world. And these are the things we try to evangelize in the world, that there is a more mindful, ethical way of doing marketing where you can still perform, but just respect more the real user journeys and people's data preferences.
Excellent. Next track, streaming and entertainment, which, you know, there's probably some privacy bits in there too, I'm sure. I don't know what they are. I'll defer to you on that. But, you know, a couple of the main topics that we're looking at, especially this year, there's a whole lot of YouTube, which I find fascinating. YouTube is making a very large resurgence at this event in particular. I like to think I had something to do with that because I'm absolutely addicted to YouTube. Everybody else is addicted to, you know, Everybody else is addicted to all these social platforms. I'm on YouTube. Probably half my television viewing is YouTube. So,
you know, I just checked the statistics. YouTube is bigger than any other streaming, like Netflix and so on. It's like number one.
It's the best stuff.
We're not alone.
Yeah, it's the best stuff. And I mean, I think to me, it's such a great mix of short form and longer form content, too. You know, you're not just going on there and, you know, endlessly scrolling looking for something. You can sit down and watch something that's an hour long. And, you know, there's great stuff on there. The other thing that we're looking at a lot of is just the future of streaming in general, which, you know, every time I think we've kind of hit that peak of what streaming is going to do for the industry, I am proven wrong and somebody else introduces something
else. I think
else.
We can keep being proven wrong.
It's yeah.
People find a way to reinvent.
When it comes to the sort of privacy side of, you know, streaming and television, where are you guys looking at there?
For example, we have our solutions not just for web, but also for app and connected TVs, which is like a new trend as well. Like now you can have like proper data privacy, respecting users' choices, asking the same things you can ask on a website, also on your app, obvious, but maybe less obvious on a connected TV. We're starting getting clients with these solutions as well that are more mindful in this space, but we're expecting to see more and more. One, because streaming is getting bigger and bigger. You also watch YouTube on TV or and so on, right? Like on all your devices. But also, like, there's more advertising as well for connected TV and so on. So like all this is becoming more of a streamlined ecosystem rather than like different bubbles everywhere.
Yeah. Well, last but not least, our fourth track for the day is not really a track so much as a stage, but it's listed under tracks, so I'm going to mention it anyway. It's at the Empower Lounge, which is actually just a few feet away from where we are right now. A lot of the topics there are cultural in nature today. For example, how brands could tap into culture to earn fandom and credibility, which is something I'm interested in because when I become a fan of something, I way overdo it. I think a lot of us do, but I'm probably a little bit more guilty than most. And then how boomers, Gen X, millennials, and Gen Z can excel together, which I'm actually going to try and make it into that particular session because I'm not sure there's a room where all four of those generations sit and, you know, all agree on anything. Any thoughts you might have on any of that?
It's true that these generations have lived with the digital world in different ways, right? Some grew up with it, some were born with it, and so on. But honestly, like I'm seeing more and more commonality lately and also looking at some other statistics, it's like very similar preferences. At the end of time, we're all humans. And especially now in the age of AI, I think like we need to also take a bit more time to understand what makes us human and what people resonate with. As I said, my colleague will present this Thursday her talk on YouTube and how to drive YouTube to perform. And our audiences is quite splitting around these audiences that you mentioned. And I think ultimately what we did is, although we're a B2B solution, we applied B2C principles. It's entertaining, it's raw, it's fun, it's engaging, it's providing a bit of like novelty in terms of information, and it just works. So I think, yeah, it's boiling down to that. Just things for people. Like we all resonate, we're all emotional, so we all want to be touched with all these like videos and things that we are following belong to somewhere, right? Like all these are basic human needs.
Excellent. Well, last but not least, the special event of the evening is the Futurist Female Awards, which is our globally celebrated program and awards that recognize and celebrate outstanding trailblazing women in marketing, technology, leadership, entrepreneurship, and more. I would tell you which edition of the Futurist Female Awards this is. I honestly have lost track. But that is taking place today at 7 o'clock in the Innovation Lounge. Will you be attending?
Yes, I'll be there watching.
So for this next segment, I would like to kind of ask sort of a advertising-focused question and get your, and your, you know, by extension, user-centric perspective on it, if you don't mind. Most of these are going to involve privacy. The first one for this episode, when you think of the evolving state of online privacy in 2025 from the global advertiser perspective, and I realize this is a very general question, but it's a very general show, so it's okay. What do you see? What are the types of opportunities you see, and what are the types of challenges you see this year?
So I keep on saying, right, we need to do marketing in a world where data privacy is here to stay. Originally, it was because of legislations, things like GDPR and so on. But now it's like in many countries around the world with different names and acronyms that I even got lost into and stuff like that. But it doesn't, it's not about that anymore. Now it's about users' preferences. Users are demanding that they know now that they got the feeling like, okay, I'm sovereign on my data. And like usually it used to be like manipulated or abused or whatever. So I really want to know and I want that to be respected. So we need to operate now in this world. Like this is here, it's going to stay. But there is still ways to see how you can create a brand because that was the basic of marketing. It's not about how you can manipulate the data, but really create a brand, make people trust you with what kind of campaigns and tactics and strategies and so on. And ultimately, it's basically how can you grow in marketing while respecting all these things? So we're seeing a lot of transformation now. We're calling it like a step into more ethical marketing. Like I think if you look at the marketing world, advertising in general is like more than 50 years old. And it used to be originally about brand and strategies and stuff like that. But the more we got into the digital realm, it was all about passing data, clicks, measurement, like very specific short term. And we kind of lost track. So we went from one extreme to another. And now I think we're finding our place in the middle, which is what we call ethical marketing, but you can still perform. So one important thing that happened in 2024 last year was with Digital Markets Act, like Google started creating this solution for Google Consent Mode V2, which was a way to say, like, you don't need to know who exactly these people are. You can still extrapolate which campaigns are performing even on your non-consented data. And we're partners with Google on that, and we did, like, amazing things. We saw a lot of interest from marketers last year. So there are more and more solutions. We are working as well on releasing different things like server-side targeting and a lot of things that will help marketers gather their own data rather than depending on the ecosystem, third-party data, and so on, do things better, and go back to the basics of marketing. As I said, it's all about brand belonging and all these things rather than just overusing data.
You know, we hear a lot about how the companies that are most responsible with our data, especially with younger generations, they're paying quite a bit of attention to this. Whereas, you know, for example, my parents do not at all. I don't know why. But, you know, we're seeing that the companies that are really paying attention to consumer concerns, you know, about data are the ones that are really doing well. Like, that is a cultural thing that, you know, you can't help but spot. And yet we see a lot of companies that still really, I don't want to say they're not taking it seriously, but a lot of brands out there that are just kind of, yeah, it's over here. You know, we're not doing anything egregiously wrong, but we're not doing anything to really, you know, help matters either. In your assessment, is that something that eventually changes for everybody? I mean, is that something that has to change for brands?
Just like you notice, a lot of people notice it. And that's why I'm saying it's not about legislations anymore. It's people demanding their rights now. And you can spot when a company just checks a legal box or they really care and do things well. It's like a lot of signs like this. Like, we are running now a campaign called First Impression Matter, because, like, the moment you land on a website, first thing you see is, like, what they do about your data. And do you just slap something in there, or do you do it mindfully and, like, with real care of how you explain and branding your banners and all these things? So all these details really matter. Like, we have more and more research coming to back this up in terms of, like, users' trust is in this, like, very small impressions. The way you handle, the way you portray that you care about that is really important. As I said, is it just a legal box, or it's a marketing approach done well because you care and people can see it?
Excellent. Well, that's really all we have time for our first episode this morning. Aleta, thank you so much for joining me. We will be back this afternoon for the afternoon roundup.
Excellent. See you later.
Thank you.